Coming up on this episode...
Among the students, this was the big thing on campus. Friends and students are going to talk because the student who dies, a student named Brantley, dies in his gown. Off the tower, in the gown, plop on the ground. That Brantley knew too much about a secret society.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections. Hosted by your two favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB Radio. I'm Peter Biello.
And I'm Orlando Montoya. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own ideas and thoughts about just what gives these works the narrative edge. All right, Peter, so we're going to talk about our college years today.
How much time do we have? I mean, we could talk about that, but I assume you might have a book, too.
I actually do have a book. We're not just going to reminisce. And it's actually an excellent book. It's a coming-of-age book, you might call it. You also might want to put it in the category of mystery. It's set on a college campus, so it has all the romance and bad behavior associated with the wonders of youth. It's called Angels at the Gate by Atlanta writer Sherry Joseph. So, Peter, where did you go to college?
I went to University of Maine, Farmington for undergrad, and University of North Carolina, Wilmington for grad school.
And so in either of those two places, what was sort of the most memorable thing that happened on campus? Not to you personally, not like the loves of your life, but like... headline stuff, maybe a scandal or a celebrity visit.
Well, the celebrity visit, I actually have two because they're related, and it's perfect for this podcast, actually, because it's literary. So in about 2007, I think it was 2007, so Jonathan Franzen came to the campus to speak. He was the author of The Corrections, big name. Everybody was excited to have him. And at the time, you know, we had a big auditorium where he would speak, and then he would answer questions from the audience. And at those days, anybody who wanted to could just approach the mic and start asking questions. And during that appearance, some guy just went to the microphone and just asked this really convoluted question about, had nothing to do with literature or his books or anything. And Jonathan Franzen on stage was noticeably uncomfortable. Like, he's kind of a nerdy, awkward guy in general. So to be asked this question was embarrassing for everybody around. And don't ask me what the question was. I can't remember it anymore. So after that embarrassing night with Jonathan Franzen and that weird question, nobody was allowed to ask questions like that anymore. Like, there were note cards for any questions that anybody had. So I think the following year, John Updike, you know John Updike?
Yeah.
He came to campus. This was like, I think, the year before he died, so 2008. And he was doing a reading, and all the questions were curated, and it was going fine. And then in the middle of his reading, a woman jumped onto the stage and handed him one of his early collections of poetry and says, "Read this poem." And he looked at the poem, and he was embarrassed by that choice, because I think it was one of his more misogynistic poems, like a poem that he probably would have abandoned and been happy to forget. But out of politeness, he said, "Well, I don't know why you want me to read this poem, but I'll read this poem." And he read the poem, and then he moved on. But it was a big thing on campus. John Updike being embarrassed after Jonathan Franzen having been embarrassed.
So two embarrassing author events.
Yeah, and it wasn't the author's fault, really. I mean, you know, the woman might have had legitimate concerns about the misogyny in the poem. I don't remember what poem it was. But yeah, really awkward all the way around.
Well, I remember Maya Angelou coming to our campus, which was a big event. But the reason I'm asking about sort of memorable events from campus is because in this book, we have a memorable event on campus, and that is a horrible death. A charismatic student, male student, falls off a Carillon Tower and dies.
So it's a mystery, perhaps.
Yes. We're going to find out over the course of the many chapters here what actually happened on that Carillon Tower. But this is the event that sort of starts the book and gets the book going.
The premise sounds very... like The Secret History, Donna Tartt. You familiar with that book?
No.
Anyway, well, it depending on what you have to say, it might be similar, but that's a great book. But anyway, go on.
Well, we've got this mystery, but before we get to the mystery, we kind of got to set the scene.
Okay, so what college is it at?
So it's at a fictional college called Rock Haven University.
Not in Vermont.
Is there a Rockhaven in Vermont?
No, but that's where the secret history is set. So, okay. So where is this fictional Rockhaven?
This fictional Rockhaven is in like a southern mountain town, but we don't know exactly. But it's fairly obvious that Rockhaven University is based on Suwannee University. Suwannee University in Tennessee, the University of the South.
Okay. What is that school known for?
Well, that school is known for a lot of things. In fact, I was going to go visit Suwannee earlier this year when I visited Chattanooga.
Why? Why would you visit a university
now? Because it's so beautiful.
It's known for its beauty.
It's known for its beauty. It's on like a mountain and they got beautiful buildings. And another thing that kind of makes it obvious that it's Suwannee is the gowns.
Gowns.
Have you heard of gownsmen?
No. Do you have to wear, is like a gown a uniform for students there?
Yeah, so the gown is something that the students wear, kind of like in, you know, Hogwarts or something.
Really?
They dress around. Yeah, they go
around. Is this a religious school?
Yeah, it's affiliated with a religion, I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's Episcopal maybe, but it's a very traditional Southern school. And in this book, the gown is a major plot point because the student who dies, a student named Brantley, dies in his gown, off the tower, in the gown, plop on the ground. And the book is narrated by a female student named Leah, and here is the author, Sherry Joseph, setting up the plot.
I have a narrator whose name is Leah Gavin, and she has a sort of contentious relationship with Brantley Sims. And in the present time of the book, he has been dead for a year. And so she's been thinking back on his death and the circumstances that were his death is ruled an accident. And there's not a lot that is known about the specific details of what happened to him, except that he was drinking. This is a college that's kind of known for its heavy drinking. And that he was wearing his academic gown at the time that he fell off the tower. And other details are not known. It's not known if he was alone.
So Leah has a contentious relationship with him, but because it's ruled an accident, so she's not considered a suspect at all?
No, so there's not like really a suspect in this thing from a police point of view. From the police point of view, it was an accident. Case closed. But, you know, among friends, among the students, this was the big thing on campus, friends and students are going to talk. So Leah is more like an investigator. She becomes sort of like a detective among her groups of friends, trying to find out the circumstances that led to Brantley's death.
Okay. And what's she like? Is she someone that the reader can easily grow to like?
Absolutely. So I liked spending time inside Leah's mind. She is an outsider on campus. She does not come from money because a lot of the folks on the campus come from money.
Oh man, secret history vibes. Anyway, yeah. Go on.
She pays her own way. She's a waitress. You know, she doesn't have family to speak of. Her clothes are not fashionable. And she's really not impressed by Greek life. She's not impressed by the cliques of people who stick to each other. She goes around to all the different groups, the hippie kids, the artsy loners. She hangs around with the rich sons of money in the fraternities. So she has a good view of sort of the entire population of the campus.
She's in a particular social group from the beginning. And then she comes to know some other characters who are in a different fraternity, in a different social group that Brantley was also connected to. And this is a campus that's where it's very friendly. Everyone goes to each other's parties. There's not really a lot of exclusion of people, but it is a school where you tend to know your own social group. And
there are circles.
The
there are cliques.
Yes, exactly. And so she sort of accidentally winds up being the one person maybe on campus who has access to these different social circles that Brantley was connected to.
So, Peter, what were the social circles that you had in college?
The creative writing crew kind of hung around together. both in undergrad and in grad school. And it didn't matter what genre you were writing. If you were part of the Writers Guild, then you were hanging out in the Writers Guild space and, you know, doing workshops outside class. Those were the folks that I hung around with.
Well, I really didn't have a social group, to be quite honest with you. I was working all the time. I was very serious. I eventually started working at WUCF, the on-campus radio station, and I got to know the folks there, so they became my friends. But I certainly didn't know any Greeks.
Nor did I. There were no fraternities at my undergrad school, and there were in my grad school, but I was a grad student.
Well,
I'm
in
not
this book,
that.
Fraternity brothers and sorority sisters make up many of the main characters in the book.
Yeah, so you mentioned another main character. You said Leah had a co-lead investigator. Who is that?
So that's Quinn, and Quinn is one of the many potential romantic partners for Leah.
Okay.
Leah, at the beginning of the book, does not have much experience with boys, but by the end, she experiences sex for the first time. She also experiences heartbreak and jealousy and all the feelings of being in love, including being in that sort of weird state of love when you're kind of between love and friendship and hatred. And and that's why everybody can relate to this book.
So tell me more about Quinn. What's he about?
So honestly, when I started reading this book, I didn't like any of the guys in this book. I wondered if I should put the book down and stop reading, because these were the kinds of guys who were, when I was in college, these were the guys who were beating me up and, you know, calling me from across the campus, right? Frat brothers, jocks, macho guys, and I was an overweight, nerdy gay boy walking alone, ripe for attack. So the kind of behavior that these boys were exhibiting, you know, the drinking, the partying, the homophobia, the machismo, the daring the system and breaking the rules, these kind of reminded me of my own experiences with these guys in college. But then I thought, no, that's bias. Give these guys a chance. And so I'm not going to say that by the end of the book, all of the characters redeemed themselves, but enough of them did to at least they became sort of more individual to me. And here's what Sherry Joseph had to say when I told her about my reservations about these guys in the book.
I think of the guys in this novel, because everybody goes Greek at this school, the guys are really very nice. They're very nice boys. But this is the 80s. This is the late 80s. So the expectations for male behavior are a little more lax, I would say. And Leah is also contending with boys for the first time. She hasn't had a lot of exposure to boys. But the ethos at this school is that it trains young gentlemen. It's about the education of young gentlemen. So they all do have this, the mindset of being a gentleman.
So by the time this book ends, I will call some of the male characters gentlemen, but I will keep others in firmly in the category of boy and hold contempt for them. But I'm not going to say where Quinn falls on that because I want you to read the book.
Right. Okay. Well, so what theories emerge about Brantley's death?
Well, by the end of the book's first half, some ideas are percolating. One is that Brantley was gay and was about to be publicly shamed, and so he threw himself off the tower. Suicide is plausible, you know, from my experience, I can say that. You know, but at the same time, everybody in this book is either gay or a slut at some point because it's very sexually repressed, and so all the guys get called gay and all the girls get called slut just because of the atmosphere on campus. Another theory is that Brantley knew too much about a secret society, one that held a lot of power on campus and off campus.
So if you want to try to climb the social ladder, that's the way to do it, is to get into the most secret society that there might be on campus. But it's societies that are so secret, they're really only rumors to to someone like Leah. Leah has no, in fact, she doesn't even know of rumors of secret societies until she gets a little bit farther into the events of the novel.
So another theory is that he was pushed off the tower and it was murder. But, you know, another theory is that it was just an accident. As I said, these guys drank, they did stupid things, they dared themselves and got into accidents all the time, not just on the tower. So Leah, in fact, doesn't know what happens until the very, very end.
All right, so secret society, this truly, truly does have some relationship, I think, to The Secret History by Donna Tartt. I mean, I know you haven't read it, but... I think I need to read this book now just to see if it, to what extent it is in conversation with that book. I mean,
it's set on a college campus.
Someone dies through a fall. There is a secret society involved.
Okay.
There are cliques. The narrator of the book, the first person narrator, is does not come from a wealthy family. And that's so a lot of parallels.
Well, that's why I have you here, Peter, to help me with these things.
This podcast is also on YouTube, so I'll have to splice a cover of the book, the Donna Tartt's book, because the cover, we have the cover of Angels at the Gate here. Let's look at that cover. Now let's look at the cover of The Secret History. We've got similar faces, similar coloring, and it's just kind of uncanny, the similarities already.
Well, I wish I had asked her about that, but...
How could you have known?
I didn't know.
Well, it's a mystery... we won't do spoilers, of course. I'll have to read it to figure out what exactly caused this guy's fall. But what kept you reading? What gives this book the narrative edge?
Well, there's a lot of things. There's the scene setting in the book. You know, I love the mountain setting, the campus setting. But also the clues that were kind of doled out were kind of vague enough to keep you going. We want to find out if love will blossom with Leah and with whom. But most of all, it kind of reminds me of my own younger days, the good things and the bad things, the mistakes that I made, but also the lessons that I learned, the friendships that were made there. As Sherry Joseph said sort of at the end of the book, in the words of Leah, that the bonds that are formed in college, and I would argue probably high school as well, remain with us forever. And so these stories, these characters helped me to explore those bonds, those memories, and challenge me. And so I really, really enjoyed this book.
Well, it's not about the number of deaths or the manner of deaths. It's about the friends you make along the way. Well, the book is Angels at the Gate by Sherry Joseph. Orlando, thanks for telling me about it.
Thank you very much.